You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This Wednesday, the 14th of August, marked the 7th International Day of Justice for victims of Japanese military sexual slavery. I spoke with Rebecca Jung, spokesperson for local community group Korean New Zealanders for a Better Future, about what this really means, some of the history around this and current tensions between Japan and Korea. Rebecca starts by explaining what Korean New Zealanders for a Better Future do.
We are involved in community organizing for activism on a range of different issues affecting people in both Korea and New Zealand. Some of the issues that we have been involved with include working with the families of the Sewol ferry tragedy victims in South Korea, supporting survivors of Japanese military sexual slavery, and also being involved in solidarity work. For example, we were part of the Asian delegation that visited Ihumatsu a couple of weekends ago. So a range of different things.
This coming Wednesday will be the 7th International Day of Justice for the victims of Japanese military sexual slavery. Would you be able to explain what this means exactly?
Sure. So during World War II, the Japanese imperial government kidnapped, coerced and lured girls and women from across the Asia Pacific region into sex slavery at military camp stations, which were essentially brothels run by the military. So an estimated 300,000 girls and women were taken, and most didn't make it back home after the war.
So they were taken from their countries to other countries and put into these brothels?
Yes. So some of the countries that were affected by the sex slavery operation included Taiwan, China, South Korea, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore. People also who belonged within Dutch colonies in Indonesia were affected. So we have one survivor who actually lives in Australia, who's done a lot of activism throughout her life as well. And just yesterday, historic French military documents revealed for the first time that was like evidence that there were also comfort stations in Vietnam. So it's a pan-Asia issue.
And how many women did this affect?
So an estimated 300,000 girls and women. So I think the ages range from young teens, so like 12, 13, 14-year-olds, to women in their 20s.
Okay, and is the term comfort woman, which sort of has been given to it, is that an okay term to use to refer to them?
So comfort woman is a euphemism, and it's a term that was used by the Japanese military to describe these women who were victims of sex trafficking as a tool that gave comfort to the soldiers. So the United Nations approved term and that the survivors themselves use would be victims or survivors of Japanese military sexual slavery.
Why is it the 7th International Day of Justice? What's the significance of it being the 7th?
So at the end of World War II, as I said, most of the victims didn't make it back home. Many remained displaced in the countries that they had been taken to, and the few who did make it back to their home countries, because it was 1940 and they were victims of horrific sex crimes, there was a lot of stigma about that. And even those who disclosed what had happened to them to their families felt the need to, you know, keep it a secret for decades and decades. And it wasn't until August 14, 1991, that the first survivor, a Korean grandmother called Kim Hak-sun, came forward and publicly shared her story. And that kind of set off a wave of survivors who felt empowered to also come forward. So August 14, 1991 was when she gave this historic press conference. So August 14th is the day that we commemorate the start of this movement. It's an International Day of Justice and Remembrance because it is now like an international movement that includes women in all different countries. And it has kind of extended from just being about this issue of a historical war crime and getting justice for that, to how we can work to remove the causes of this historical war crime. So towards action for peace, demilitarization and gender equity.
The Japanese government has made attempts at apologising in the past, with the most recent, I believe, being in 2015. But what's been lacking from these apologies?
One of the key slogans of the movement is official apology, legal reparations. As you said, the Japanese government has issued statements in the past expressing regret, but it was never... So in the past, the Japanese government has issued expressions of regret and so forth, but they have never been in concordance with the principle of survivor-centered justice. So the survivors have never been directly receiving of an apology. Even when these expressions were made, they were coupled with other posturing from the Japanese government, such as visiting the shrines of the war criminals that oversaw the Comfort Women regime, or immediately backpedaling and minimizing the expression of regret that was offered, which kind of negates the impact of having done that in the first place. The most recent iteration of this was in 2015, where an agreement was made between South Korea and the Japanese government that did not take place in consultation with the survivors and has been widely criticized for not kind of fulfilling this principle of survivor-centered justice.
So in terms of survivor-centered justice, what would a better future be? What would sort of provide closure for this?
So the survivors have set a number of different ideas of what survivor-centered justice would look like for them. So the first two things are an official apology and legal reparations. They also include persecuting any surviving war criminals. So these are things that have occurred for some victims of these, you know, crimes against humanity that have happened during World War II, but neglected for this group of survivors. They also advocate for teaching this history to the next generation, both in the countries where the survivors are located and to Japanese students as well, because it, you know, it gives them a balanced view of history. And also they have this wish that memorials to the victims are made so that this history can be remembered and not repeated.
Speaking of education around this, what events do Korean New Zealanders for a Better Future have planned for this week?
So on Wednesday, the International Day of Justice and Remembrance, we will be running a Wednesday demonstration in Aotearoa Square. So it's actually also the 1,400th Wednesday demonstration in Seoul being held on that day as well. So it's kind of a momentous occasion on multiple fronts. Later in the evening, we'll be screening a documentary about the life of one of the Comfort Women survivors, grandmother Kim Bok-dong, who went on to spend the last decades of her life as a human rights activist. We're also screening it at Academy Cinemas on Saturday at 2 p.m. and that does have English subtitles if anyone wants to come, and it's free/koha entry.
Just going back to this issue again, how are relations between Japan and Korea currently?
So it's actually a time of reasonable tension, I think. I have seen in the news that there has been kind of ongoing reporting of how the relationship between the Japanese government and South Korean government are not good at the moment. So it's a bit of a long story, but it's also kind of linked in with the history of Japanese imperialism. So a South Korean court ruled in favor of the survivors' colonial era forced labor camps, or Japanese forced labor camps, specifically those that worked for Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. And in response to this, the Japanese government placed new trade restrictions on South Korea, accompanied with strong criticism of the ruling by the Prime Minister himself. This was seen globally and in Korea as the use of kind of diplomatic and economic means to silence a survivor's plight for justice for this crime that was committed against them. So this kind of sparked off this activism within Korea that centered around boycotting Japanese products and tourism and kind of completing the process of decolonization from the era of Japanese imperialism. So it's this big movement that calls for the resolution of historical injustice and achieving justice for those surviving victims of Imperial Japan.
Just before we wrap up, do you have any sort of additional comments that you'd like to make?
Part of the reason why the frequency of spotting rising sun flags and this tension between the Japanese and South Korean governments is so relevant is that historically anti-Korean rhetoric has been used to firstly justify the crimes against humanity that were committed during World War II. And in the present day, these attitudes are still being manifested and vocalized by nationalist, kind of far-right Japanese political leaders to exclude ethnic Korean people living in Japan from culturally appropriate education, to disrupt the memorial to the victims of wartime crimes, and also to slander them. So even though this is an issue that starts with a historic act of violence, the reverberations of it go on to the present day and still have a palpable impact on the lives of people now. I just want to make it really clear that this discussion, justice for the survivors of Japanese military sexual slavery, the tension between the two governments, and discussing specifically the rise of militarism and nationalism in Japan, has nothing to do with criticizing or discriminating against people from Japan. Yeah, we're all capable of both humanity and inhumanity, and kind of raising these issues and seeking justice is just part of an ethical remembering of history and trying to create a future in which these sorts of atrocities are not repeated. And I definitely acknowledge the people in Japan who have been working with the survivors of Japanese military sexual slavery for decades and, you know, really difficult conditions to do their part in kind of creating better possibilities for the future.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.